Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It's Friday. We finally made it. It's been a horrible week in the markets, but Friday, what is it, 18th of August, 2023. Cashmere John is here. In fact, it's Puffer John today, but he has the foresight to live in the driest area of the UK. It's been torrential here today, John. What's it like with you?
We've had it's gloomy, but no rain. But we've had torrential rain. We've had a month's worth. Until the last week or so.
Well, it's good for crops, I suppose, and grass and all that stuff anyway.
It's not good. It's harvest time. We've got to try and get the crops in now before they get wet. So they're all out with the combines in the middle of the night at the moment. It's quite something. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, listen, today, because it's a Friday, not much in the way of RNSs at the day. We'll cover what's out there and what's moving. But if you look at it, the FTSE 100, right, retesting its lows. FTSE 250, about 6 days down. The AIM All share, aside from the dash for cash COVID crash in 2020, which bounced back up and down, it's at a seven-year low. We did talk about it yesterday. Will it, get to those lows? And in fact, the majority of the respondents on the survey were correct in saying, yes, it will go to new lows. So it's done that. But I think there's opportunities here. I'm getting quite excited. I've got a couple of stocks up. And in fact, it helps sometimes when you've got a couple of stocks that are up and doing well. It doesn't matter so much. And also got a bit of cash. So I'm quite bullish because I see some opportunity among some very good businesses that are quite cheap, So I don't know what you're feeling. Your sentiment's low. If you're taking a hammering on one stock, that can turn your mood. But anyway, if you do just want to switch off and not look at the markets, someone suggested a book we should read. And I thought, it's a good idea, actually. So by all means, first of all, if you haven't hit that subscribe button, and I'm talking to you right now, yes, you, hit it, please, okay? Hit that subscribe button. But also suggest an investment book you've read that you would recommend to others. Because who is it? Someone's Craig. And we were talking about something else, and he said, book recommendation in relation to the materials we are dependent on and the net zero agenda and associate companies, Material World, written by Ed Conway. I do like Ed Conway's stuff from Sky, actually, if you look at his stuff on Twitter. He does long threads. And but John, you're a learned man. You're very erudite. You were editor of the Investors Chronicle, for heaven's sake. So you must have, through your time, read a few good investment books. And before John gets into his, if you've read one and you'd recommend it, please put it in the comments. But John, what would you recommend?
Well, I mean, my sort of favourite classic is Philip Fisher. Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits. And this is what I've talked about this before, is Scuttlebutt. He is the inventor of the sort of Scuttlebutt principle. And really what he's talking about is just that the extent to which you should conduct research on companies that you might invest in. And the way in which you go about that and where you seek your information. And the answer is not necessarily just from analyst reports and the media, but it's actually sort of looking around you and going out into the world and speaking to businesses, competitors, customers, all sorts. I've always liked that as a principle, and that for me is the classic. I know there's other classics,
Classics, Benjamin Graham and all that. But do you find those quite dry to read? I've tried all of them. I've listened to those audiobooks, but I find them quite dry and hard to read. I do some time honored principles in there, but I do find them hard to read. Do you know what I go on some of the books I've read? When I first started, and I wanted to be a stockbroker when I was very young. I don't know why, but I didn't have the maths head.
You didn't want to be an astronaut like everybody else.
But I went through a couple of books that I really enjoyed. When I first started reading, and I used to work in Marks and Spencer's in the City of London. I used to watch all these City Guff folk go in. And one of the books I first bought was Market Wizards, Interviews with Top Traders by Jack D. Swasier. That inspired me a lot. And I went through all the Warren Buffett books and all the sensible books. And then I went to another book called How to Make Money in Stocks. It sounds a bit of a salesman's snake oil thing, but A Winning System in Good Times and Bad, fourth edition. It's William O'Neill, and he has this sort of acronym he uses, CanSlim, which is very good. And it looks about, you know, companies and earnings and all that stuff. And it goes into a lot of depth. So I'd recommend that one. More recently, a few years back, about 6 years back, I think 5, 6 years, I interviewed a guy called, he's a fund manager, called Lee Freeman Shaw, The Art of Execution, How the World's Best Investors Get It Wrong and Still Make Millions. It's about conviction plays. And when you, even when you're, you know, wrong on the majority of plays, one good one, if you play it right, can make it. And and he sort of identifies different kind of traits in traders. That's a good one. I also like The Naked Trader by Robbie Burns. And more recently, I listened to The Psychology of Money, Timeless Lessons on Wealth, Greed and Happiness by Morgan Housel.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, psychology, yeah, it's so important to investing. So, I mean, that is a very good place to start. You've got Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow, which is in a similar vein, not necessarily, you know, entirely related to the stock market, but still very, very, very interesting. There is a book. I'm going to give a book a plug. This one I've read recently. It's by a very, very good friend.
I know who it is. I know what it is. Yeah, go on.
You get a camera? No. There you go. Algie Hall, 4 Ways to Beat the Market.
Yeah.
Now, Algie, I used to work with at the Investors Chronicle. He was the guy that really sort of he took stock screening to a new level. Mm-hmm. And this is really what, you know, the summary of that. And he's a fantastic writer, fantastically knowledgeable about, you know, company accounts and just with so much experience of having watched alongside me the stock markets for many years. So as a recent addition to my pile, that is a cracker.
In fact, I've got it right here. Do you know what? It's great. I do find a lot of investment books, it's a fine line between, you know, being almost a text manual, you know, and actually an easy read. I think of those books there, Robbie Burns is very easy. If you're starting out, Robbie Burns and also Lee Freeman Shaw, The Art of Execution, very easy reads. It's almost like a novel in some way. Anyway, put your suggestions below, please, in the comments, if you would. Look at the markets today. Awful, like I say, you know, FTSE close to recent lows, down almost shy of 1%. FTSE 250, just over 1% down. FTSE AIM All Share down close to 1% as well. But look at that. Rise on the FTSE 100, it's the old staples there.
Defensives.
Yeah, defensives, tobacco. You can never fault it, but you know, you keep smoking, whatever happens. Even if the world's collapsing, you probably smoke more. That's a good. What's the fallers here? Let's look at the fallers here. Airtel, Andrew Gass. Yeah, so Andrew Gass, of course, like commodities, Burberry. That's worrying because there's a luxury angle to that. China, isn't it? Because China, for both those there, China's in trouble. It looks like China is. In fact, Evergrande now, it's taken quite a few years, but they've now filed for bankruptcy protection in the US, which is their biggest property business, and even their second biggest property business. I can't remember what it's called now. Is it called Countrywide or something? Country Garden, I think it's called.
Country Garden, yeah.
That's in problem as well, paying its bonds. So there's something happening in China. They've stopped reporting on unemployment figures below the age of 20 because it's so bad. We'll just ignore them.
Yeah, I mean, the China property thing, I mean, that's, you know, that's been a slow motion car crash for quite some time. I must admit I thought that would sort of play out a bit quicker. But presume, you know, obviously the Chinese authorities do not want a significant property market crash there. There's a lot of money tied up in real estate in China. So yeah, it's not good. It's not good. I think, you know, just looking at those fallers as well, I presume we're going to come on to this, but you know, big retail is getting thumped today for the obvious reasons that retail sales were much worse than expected.
They were half what were expected. So I think core retail sales were expected to come in 0.7%. They came in minus 0.7. So they came in minus 1.4. So and a lot of people are blaming the weather. And I do sort of see that with a really damp July. But how much of that is cost of living crisis, people just tightening the belts? How much of that is weather? So it's never easy when the Bank of England are trying to weigh up whether people are tightening their belts. Was it the weather or was it because they're skint? You know, who knows?
Retailers, you know, weather is the sort of go-to excuse for the retail sector. It has been for as long as I can remember. We had a cold winter or cold summer. They ordered too many pairs of shorts or too many barbecues. You know, we had a warm winter and they'd ordered too many jumpers. I mean, this has been going on for years and years. But I mean, what all I would say is, you know, what this data suggests to me is the fragility of this sector. I've not invested in retail over the years. It's fraught, I think, with pitfalls. We know high streets have sort of been hollowed out. Even online is running up against, you know, sort of cost inflation, delivery cost inflation, and it's really, really tough. I mean, I guess with the retail sales figures, their value as well. So the other thing you're seeing here is that basically not only has the value of goods fallen, you know, sold fallen sharply, but that means that given inflation, the volume has. Performance has been even worse. So, you know,
yeah,
people spending more money on less stuff.
Exactly.
On less stuff. That can't continue indefinitely.
Here's the figures. Look, all minuses. They're in the red. That means they're below forecast. Here's forecast. Here's actual. So,
The funny thing on that is, sorry, just to round a retail bit up. You know, Marks & Spencer's had some really good numbers out the other day. And I think the sort of thesis that's forming is that actually what we'll see is, you know, the separation from the weak and the strong in this sector.
Yeah. I mean, it's rallied so strongly. Look at that. It's a multi-bagger there. Just a quick comment here on the site yesterday, this morning, I think it was. But Chris says, thank you for your daily updates. Chris, have you hit that subscribe button? Okay, please do. And for your advocacy of thorough research. As a novice, your approach has really helped organize my research process. I'd be interested to hear your take on ANIC, which is agronomics. I invested in agronomics about 3 years back. So I believed all this, on many levels, I believed, you know, fake meat or lab meat was the way forward. Not only ecologically, because it's better for the environment. There's less, you know, land use, water use is less intense. It's healthier. And of course, you know, there's also the ethos of why would you want to kill an animal if you didn't have to? Animals don't want to be killed. So, but if you still enjoy a burger, then you can still have it that way. That's come off the boil a bit recently. And in fact, I don't like investment companies because they're only as good as their average investment. So you may have some that will shoot away and do well, some will do really badly. But at the end of the day, that investment company is only as good as its average. And if you can get individual exposure to a company you like that they hold, that means it has to be listed. And that's why I never understand why you get investment companies investing in listed companies, because you can do that yourself. You can invest in those listed companies. But if they're non-listed, but you know, a private companies, then of course you may have to go that route. But again, sometimes you have to invest in a basket load of companies through that investment company when a lot of them won't do well. A lot of them, by nature, a lot of them are startups, very risky, and they won't do well. They may even go bust. So, and if you look at the chart of agronomics here, it's not pretty.
It's not a dissimilar story to many other investment companies who are targeting sort of private companies. There are obviously fears over valuation and how companies have been reporting valuation, and so you'll see these trading at deep discounts to the value of assets.
That's why
I quite like investment companies. I own one, City of London Investment Trust. Is, you know, I could buy, you know, all of the companies within it, but I quite like just having exposure to a basket of stocks.
What do they invest into?
Mainly, it's sort of, you know, it's large caps mainly. So,
you know, I think there's a difference between funds and investment.
Oh, it's a trust. It's an investment trust.
Oh, yeah. But investment companies, I mean, the list on the stock market, I think there's a difference in that because, like I said, if you have, even the math doesn't really work out. I mean, I have an older fund, but I mean, because I've got dividends and I want to cover off a certain area of my portfolio, I'm not. I like microcaps and, you know, nanocaps, and I want to cover off the bigger big stocks are boring, but they pay a dividend and they stabilize my portfolio a bit. So, you know, it's my biggest holding is the fund, and it covers 250, 150, you know, the 50, 150 with highest dividend payers. But
the other great thing about investment trusts is, you know, if you think sentiment has gone too far, if you think bearish sentiment is overdone, you know, that sentiment is often reflected in this discount that I refer to. So what you can do is if you think the market's got it wrong, you can buy, you know, a pool of assets cheaper than the actual value of those assets. So you've got that margin of safety built into them. I like investment trusts.
But hang on, what does
for listed and unlisted?
What are they investing in your fund? What are they largely invested in?
Listed securities, large
listed.
You know, 50, 100, 50, 250.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's fine. What I'm talking about is if you're looking at investment companies that are investing in high risk stocks, a lot of them largely unlisted, then you've got to be careful because by their very nature, then some of them are not going to do well. They're not going to survive.
But this is true. But then some of them might multi bag. So you know there is an argument to be had for for using these kind of vehicles to target unlisted investments, which gives you exposures that you can't necessarily get through listed securities to you know, perhaps some of the more exciting technologies. I mean, lab-grown meat, there is one that you can list in directly in London, which is BSF Enterprise.
Yeah, BSFA. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, it's literally there's a lot. There is a lot of competition in this space. Don't think it's. I mean, in the UK, there's not many listed companies, so that's it. But there are lots of companies now doing this, and I know it's. They'll say this is unique, but I do sort of like it. But again, the route to commercialization is tricky and hard. Like you say, if you look at Beyond Meat, for example, which is the poster child, it took off when it IPO'd. And in fact, with agronomics, you know, like I said, on the back of that sentiment, I invested in back here, back in this time, 2019. I probably missed out on the big rise. Probably did, knowing me. But, you know, it's come down. I would wait until that's, you know, technically, or from a technical perspective. And of course, like you say, there's so many investment companies now that have taken the hammer in. And when the market turns, a lot of them will do very well. And even down to, like, you know, investment managers like Jupiter and all that stuff. I would wait for this to go above 200-day moving average and break previous high. So you're talking about maybe breaking 13 pence.
I do like this. I think innovation in agriculture is an important thing.
I did videos on it, yeah. But
you know, and I think there's a lot of companies out there that are developing sort of, you know, products to address some of the environmental concerns around various agricultural products. So, you know, things like cotton have a massive, you know, environmental footprint, and there's a lot of companies out there doing things to address that. So I think it's an interesting space. And I was looking at agronomics when they had some news the other day on the lab grown stuff, and I thought I'd have another look at them. So
no, I do. If they start a rally, I'm going to look at them, because I think. But in fact, there's so many now investment companies that if they start a rally, they'll do very well. From like Ashmore, Jupiter funds, all these kind of funds, investment funds, they'll do very well. And in fact, space, you know, that investment in space and all that. Tim, is it Tin HLA? Says the property price is going down in 2023. Okay, you're going down.
Property.
I don't know where that came from, but Tim has obviously looked at the property thing we talked about. But there we are. Okay, let's look at the front page of Vox here. Here we go, Vox Markets. And Delta Systems raises $6 million IPO. They're brave.
They got it away.
Yeah, not only IPOs, and that's, you know, obviously significant, or it's just a matter of market that's frozen a little bit. IPOs have slowed right down because people are scared. Like, if you look at when the record of IPOs happened, it was pretty much the top of the bull market. But this company will probably do well over the next couple of years, you know, listing at the bottom of the market. What do they do, John?
It's sort of sensor technology for sort of oil and gas. It's sort of equipment maintenance, you know, generators, all that sort of stuff. So, in fact, mainly generators. So it's just really making sure that sort of the kit in the oil production business is working properly. Remote management. Yeah, this is an interesting trend as well. You know, using technology to make sure that plant and whatever it is throughout whatever network happens to be is working properly. I'm not sure whether they're using Internet of Things, actually, but that's the thing you will hear increasingly around sort of remote asset management.
Yeah. Gregory says, The Buy Side by Tony Duff, a book, not investment advice, but very interesting. Daftus Cluck says, Justin, me old topper, could you ask CJ Cashmere John, how many items of cashmere he has in his wardrobe, and as a gauge of how much wealth he's extracted from the markets? it's a cashmere index. There we go, a cashmere index there.
I'm going to make an admission. I think I might have picked that one up in a charity shop.
All right. He's even bargain hunting cashmere. Buy low, sell high. Fred blogs, Card, Shoe, B&M bargains, all value retailers are doing very well. Yeah, I do think now, if you look at Card, though, you've missed the boat on that. You know, I do think, you know, when you have a rise at that on a biggish company like that, look at that. In fact, let me show the chart there. That's doubling top. I mean, it's struggling to break that level here. See that box there? So I think it's going to come back down here, and it may trade in a range for a while now. So you missed it from there. And same with M&S. I think, you know, the time to get it's obvious, you know, when you look back on it, when people are multi sort of super bearish on any stock, and you're reading the reports and they're not getting any worse, the figures, that's the time to get in. And on a chart level, Marks & Spencer, like I say, if you look at the old, what I look at is a 50-day moving average break, and then a break above previous high. So it would be 145 there would be a good plan to get in. So 145 here, and now it's got to 220. So, but now, too late. You know, it's towards its high. It's buy low, sell high. That's how you do it, isn't it?
Yeah, it just depends how well they can maintain that performance. I think, again, to sort of go back to this point, UK retail, you know, you've got a handful of survivors there that are really sort of doing very well. I like Frasers. I've always liked Frasers. Absolutely.
Well, I did look at them the other day because they were literally, they're buying everything. And they've got to get some value from it. I mean, they've done very well over the last few days, but they're buying at Boohoo, Asos. They're buying Boohoo and Asos, aren't they? I think they are.
Are they buying Boohoo? No. Well, yeah, they might have a stake in it.
I mean, they're buying it, but they've got a stake in it.
And he has stakes in a lot of things, and some of them come to a full-blown purchase and some of them don't. But, you know, over the years, he's built up quite an empire of, you know, troubled retailers and then knows how to turn them around.
Big stocks, I mean, the big stocks, the biggest re-rate you'll get in a big stock, like Marks or whatever, you know, a larger stock, is when... Literally, it's been going badly for a long time and it starts getting less bad. And all of a sudden, that gets better. That then, like I said, the rally from the bottom is the swiftest upgrade you'll get. Like I said, you know, from this level where news was, it's worth going back as an example, just studying their news coming down here and see what happens here. Why did it bounce away? And then that sort of, you know, the first couple of months from literally 90 pence up to sort of 150. That's, you know, the aggressive move, and then it'll
carry on. I just don't think this point worth getting carried away. I'm just looking at the forecast. You know, we've got a forecast EPS growth 24th, less than 3%, 14% a year after, 11% a year after that. Shares, you know, P's sort of in the sort of low double digits. That seems like it's all in the price to me. And there's a lot could go wrong here with
the state of
the consumer.
So someone said, when companies are written off, you know, that's when you start looking at them. And that's, you know, and they say, hang on, it's not that bad. Not that bad. Even how cheap they are and what they're doing. When companies are written off, not on the bigger company side. Okay, so that's Han Delta, raised 6 million IPO. The video now is up. We did the podcast yesterday. The video's up with Stuart Gall. I do think you should look at that company. I mean, it's a company that's very rare on AIM where they are now going to be profitable. And they're in a hot space with AI. And the AI side, scary. And Stuart did point out, he said, no, this is a vision. But they do think by 2025, they're going to have 25 million of revenue, half that from AI. Now, if you understand they're only going to be doing 2 million of AI this year, they're going to be doing 12.5 million, adding 10 million in the next 2 years in AI. And it's grown at quite a rate. And he does point out how that's going to work. But he did say the vision. But they say, even without that, they are profitable this year on the cash they have. So, and they're sub, I think they dropped today, but they are sub literally, what, 35? Brokers have a target of 110 million market cap next couple of years, which is three times where they are right now. They're down. So, obviously, whenever you get results coming out, you have liquidity events where people sort of sell anyway, don't they, and sort of and all that stuff. So it's worth looking at that.
No, it's the best company.
Like I said, it's based in Cardiff, see? So that's lovely. And it's a local business.
Like a nice local business. What else we got?
Smart tech.
Yeah, we did. I mean, it really was a very, very quiet news day today. Smart tech, 24/7, however you want to say it. They're selling their basically, it's cybersecurity, and they're selling it through AWS now.
Okay,
Amazon Web Services, which is obviously where a lot of sort of web infrastructure now sits. You know, a lot of corporate infrastructure now sits on AWS. So, yeah, we're a good deal for them. You know, this company already makes money.
Yeah,
you know, lurking below the radar. This one, I would say. Already makes money. You know, that's a good thing. Everyman Media.
Oh, yeah.
Barbie Heimer.
Yeah. Do you know what? There is this amazing when everyone gets together and you get the celebs out. Everyone seems to copy, don't they? Oh, we better go and see one of these because all the celebs are going to watch it. Have you gone to watch any of them yet, John?
I haven't. No, I haven't. I would. I mean, I love Christopher Nolan films, so my vote would always go to Oppenheimer. And I'm sure one day Barbie.
I'm sure it would, John. I'm sure it would. It wouldn't be Barbie.
But no, I mean, this is really quite interesting. It was a first half trading update. The Barbie and Oppenheimer films were not released until the last week of July, so you don't see that in the first half trading, but the second half has got off to an absolute an absolute flyer.
Yeah.
July has just been absolutely bumper. That's carried through into August. And then you've got, you know, a really strong slate of films coming out throughout the rest of the year.
Yes. Now, this is an excellent example, right, of something that I think is literally, you know, almost sold off and given up on. People think, right, cinema, that's not going to work anymore. And then you realise, hang on a sec, it's not going to be that bad. Look at that. It's literally people giving up on that. And it's like the retailers, that, you know, Card Factory, Marks and Spencer's, and people sort of give up on it. Then it's time to do research. Because if you look at Everyman, well, I do like Everyman. Have you been there? Because I've been there. You can sit there with a pint of beer or a glass of wine and watch the film. It's a proper, you know, not these chain cinemas. Because of Cineworld going into problems, it's worth doing some research on something like this, where the sector's bombed out. But within that sector, there's some gems. And they do rely on film releases. So that there, if there is an isolated film releases coming out this year, that could do really well.
You know? I think so, yeah. And I mean, what have you got coming out? You've got the second part of the June film, which I will definitely be going to see. You've got...
What film? What's that?
Dune. Science fiction. You've got... A new Hunger Games film coming out. And some other stuff, which
is Hunger Games coming out, isn't it?
Another sort of spin-off. I'm just looking at, you know, this company was pre-COVID, you know, this was a really steady sort of steady growth story. COVID obviously, you know, whacked it for six, like it did the whole industry. It was profitable, it was growing and profitable, and obviously now it's sort of getting back on its feet. You know, we're still, the hangover from COVID is definitely not over, but, you know, I think the summer blockbusters have really helped this company to kind of put that really painful period, you know, in the rearview mirror, as I say in the article. You know, we're sort of heading towards profitability. It might, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer than expected, but it all goes back to that experiential entertainment thing we've talked about before. You know, people don't just want to go out for some sort of cheap night out. They want something more from a night out. Although we'll come on to that because I know that Weatherspoon has been talking about it.
People want, you know, a cashmere experience, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
They want, you know, luxury.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Cashmere experience at affordable prices. I think every man is actually put some, you know, put some new banking facilities in place, agreed new banking facilities with its lenders, and there's plenty of money to sort of keep expanding the portfolio. Cinemas, I think it's got 41 at the moment, but that's going to grow. Yeah, it's a nice business.
Business. I put an alert on there on 64 pence. I think if it gets above that, it did peak above that once, maybe a fake break there.
Yeah.
But if it gets above that, it may, because what's nice, so you see this flat line is flatlining on the bottom here. It's maybe, you know, found a bottom, hopefully, but be careful there. But every man. What else is on the front page? Let's go to the sort of most fun. Beacon Energy.
It's been going on for a few days, hasn't it?
BCE, there's a little ticker there. It's a tiddler, I think, isn't it? So it's probably done very well on the... at that flat line. Whatever
it is. I had a quick peek. Eight.
Yeah, yeah. And what's your thoughts?
I've no idea what's going on here.
Yeah. And we're not an oil and gas play, by the way. But they've done some appraisals, development. They've encountered good quality oil bearing reservoirs in the Meleta Schichten sandstones and the Pechtumbrona Schichten sandstones. But they do say initial evaluation of the logs indicates 34 meters of gross interval containing 28 meters of oil bearing, no water bearing sands are encountered. So it seems like good news, but it's one of those things, you know. It's almost like the promise of what's to come is better than what actually happens in oil and gas. And in fact, Upland is a good example of that. They rallied very strongly, basically on the talk of massive reserves down there. That sometimes, you know, before they get anywhere near drilling, that's when a company is like two million market cap, when they've got the promise, because the whole high potential of that is a lot more powerful to a share price movement, especially when it's a sub sort of 5 million market cap. Wow, it could be billions of dollars down there.
To travel than arrive.
Yeah, and if you look at Upland share price, I mean, where it goes from here, to, I don't know, when you start sort of raising money, actually start doing some drilling, then it gets a bit more costly, expensive, and complicated. Yeah. But it's done very well. It's a 10 bag, pretty much, or nearly eight, nine bag. That's Upland. But I did hold Upland a while back, years back. I was in the oil and gas. AQAI is one of the winners. What was a Tiddler, collaboration with the Mayo Clinic. There we are. Answers there. What else is on the front page here, John? Anything else you'll go?
Nothing that's really caught my eye. I have to say that we haven't spoken about already.
Alien Metals, they're not going to raise it. They've cancelled the second tranche of convertible loan notes, was good for them. I thought Audioboom, probably Michael Tobin, the chairman again, buying shares. I thought, but it's not this time. Stuart Last, CEO, has bought shares, and they are rising a little bit. And they did post, they're one of the most top five podcast platforms. Stuart did on Twitter today. But that's about it on there. But
yeah, the interesting one is Tanfield, big faller there. And they've got a problem in one of its investments by the looks of things.
The snorkel investment has gone underwater, is it?
It's not. It's
gone underwater, John. That
good.
Yeah.
So
snorkel.
So that's what's hitting that. Going back to your point about investing in other companies. Problematic sometimes.
Yeah, kind of. It's something to do with the outcome of the US proceedings referenced below could have an impact on its valuation. There we are. So some kind of legal issue down there. Now, so one of the RSs worth reading, we think, is today is JD Weatherspoon. And we've got a sort of survey out there. It's the correction. It's right. They've put two out.
Two corrections.
Yes.
corrected the correction.
Yeah. But what's quite good is this. It's like, obviously, this is, who's behind this. Obviously, Tim Martin's behind this because he gets a bee in his bonnet most stuff, doesn't he? But Daily Mail did an article on them about, is saying essentially, Weatherspoons delivers major blow to punters wanting a cheap bite to eat as it hikes food prices by 13%. How much has your favorite pub meal gone up by? And basically, they pointed out, they've come back, JD Weatherspoon said, the price of a ham and cheese and cheddar cheese panini was stated correctly at $5.53, but they failed to notify readers that this price also included a free soft drink.
It's not free, is it?
No.
It's part of the price.
This is the stuff of RNS. It's a free soft drink, isn't it?
Edge of the seat stuff, this one. It's changed my entire investment thesis on
The price of the brunch. Look at that. All day brunch with an alcoholic drink was staked as £11.11.
That's not
bad. It was correct in price is £10.82, actually.
That's even better.
And then the Daily Mail said apparently prices in the airports, in airport pubs, are £7. They are a different price in airports. So everything is, isn't it?
I remember
Seinfeld saying once, does shops in airports have any idea the prices they've been charged outside the airport? It's like they're completely removed. But even there, they say they've only got one draft pint, which is Leffy Blonde. It's increased over one pub. And also, even they do say, they said pretty much now, the Daily Mail said Weatherspoon's the same price everywhere else. And he said, no. So apparently 43% more expensive, the competitors, than Weatherspoon, and their food price on average 33% more expensive than JD Weatherspoon. Mm. I don't know if that's the share price is down 1.4% today.
Well, everyone realizes it's too cheap. It's beyond it being a ridiculous story. I mean, it is important in a way. You know, the hospitality industry has been struggling, as we know, and it's been hit by a lot of cost inflation. The cost of heating pubs, the electricity bills went through the roof a lot, but we know a lot of pubs are closing. So there is a serious point here as investors seek out value. You know, Weatherspoons is well positioned to provide that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what its share price has done recently, but it had taken a complete hammering over the last couple of years. But yeah, again, it's a good business. And I know that old Tim Martin is very divisive. Least for his views on Brexit, but the reality is that this is a great company. That treats its staff pretty well. Does provides a good service, good level of food, and at good prices for consumers that need it. And the other thing it does, it invests in the property that it runs its pubs from, you know, and you know, nobody wants derelict properties on the high street. Well, Wetherspoon's been actually doing something about that. So I think, you know, like what's his name? Yeah. Oh, Mike up at Sports Direct, can't remember his name now. So
Mike Ashley
and you know, Tim Martin, these figures, these sort of hate market figures. Now, I just don't know why they become lightning rods. Probably because they are outspoken, but they're actually out there running very good businesses and doing good things. And
well, that's why, because they're business owners, you know, because they have their own opinion, they go for it, you know, and that's what it is. They don't care what general thought is, they just go for it and work hard and put their head down.
And then you get the media having a dig at them, you know. I mean, like, you know, no comment regarding the Daily Mail. I'm with Tim.
Yeah, I heard a joke recently saying, some guy said, I work with drug abusers and alcoholics. It's in social care? He said, no, J.D. Weatherspoon.
Yeah.
Phil Curtis. It says, intelligent investor and security analysis are pretty dry. That's true. I have an audiobook, everything to get through them all. The audiobooks, yeah. Swedish Investor Channel is a great place to view roundups of investor book principles. Maddox says, a number of firms are gaining hugely from earning interest on clients' balances, e.g. Equals, Wise. Have we missed the boat or more to come?
Hargreaves Lansdown was another one of them. It's a bit of a...
They're at an all-time low today. I just looked at the chart. I got an alert on Hargreaves Lansdown. Let me just put this in.
Yeah, but they were doing very, very well on client account money at one point. So I don't know whether they've changed that. But oh god, I mean, what a business this is for that price.
Yeah. I mean, they're paying a good deal. You know, look at that. You see a decent support level here at that level, and then they're now on that. I wouldn't go for that. I'd go for momentum rather than just bouncing.
Well, I agree. I'll wait for that to turn. But then, you know, at some point, you're going to pick up what is an absolutely fantastic market leader at you know, a bargain basement price.
Phil also says, yes, John, Dune. Yeah, so Fredo says, don't buy E-Man, every man. Listen, I'm not saying buy, I'm saying look at it. When things are bombed out and the sentiment around that sector is negative, then I wait for momentum anyway. I look at the fundamentals first, then look at the momentum on the chart. He says, look at these, NTBR, Time. I like Time because they are doing the business of the banks. They loan to small and medium-sized businesses, but I'm worried about the scale there. It's risen very quickly, you know, of late. It's a good uptrend, though, but I'm just thinking, what scale do they have? In fact, they're one of my on a list of ideas I've got, but I'm just thinking the scale there. They're quite cheap. They're not bad Time Finance, but again, what you should worry about there is two things: scale and defaults on loans and stuff. Because if the economy is getting harder, then they may suffer that. But they look to be very good, actually. I mean, I do quite like them, but I'm just worried about the sort of scale of the this time there. You know, it's done very well from the lows here coming down. What else is there on text? I used to own Space and People. I used to own them. I used to be a significant shareholder of those. But again, I had to brush my out anyway. But again, I want a scale on that. They're a decent company, you know, doing quite well. But I like Silver Bullet as well. But again, they're burning a lot of money. Do they have enough cash? Their top line growth is very good. I like where they're in data. But they're burning cash, and I don't believe they have enough cash to get by until they have to raise again.
We did get asked to have a quick look at Gattaca.
Oh, Gattaca, go on, yeah.
It's a recruiter, and it's a specialist recruiter for STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, medicine. Had a trading update out on Wednesday. Yeah. Top line was a little weak, but the profits smashed expectations.
34 million market cap. Okay.
Yeah, and dividend reinstated. So you know, it's quite a good looking company. Big favourite Simon Thompson over at the Investors Chronicle. It's so probably worth heading over there to have a read what he thinks. But yes, you know, it's in the right bit of the market. You know, the sort of very, very, you know, high end skills based recruitment. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of sort of changes going on behind the scenes that are improving the financial performance, improving returns on capital. You know, really nice, strong balance sheet there. So yeah, lots to like about this. I mean, obviously, the big thing hanging over anyone in this sector is what's happening to the economy. You know, and we know that sort of over in the US, some of the big tech companies were laying people off. So there is a bit of a headwind. But you know, this is sort of got itself in shape to sort of trade through that. So, and the dividends back.
Yeah, look at the chart there. A good reason, you know, if you look at this, come down there, and that's, you know, bounce there, that's some support. Then it broke that, curved around, broke 50-day moving average. You wanted to get a previous highs, which is almost a previous support there. And so a couple of fake breaks there and there. So wherever you got in, the gap up is very good. When you get something like that gapping up, it's very good news. You may have to come back on some stale bears, but that's pretty much where you're getting, because it's about previous highs. And now you've got in what round about that level, 83 pence now, 107. But now we're another bit of congestion here. We need to get above, really, so that level there. But that's why. And why look at charts for momentum? Because I believe if you look at a company, you can sit there forever and it can go sideways or downwards. And just an efficient allocation of capital, rather than just sit there with your money in a stock that's not going anywhere. Oh, look at that. The VIX is above the 20-day. The VIX, which is the, of course, the volatility index, pretty much. Look at that.
Oof.
Everything else is going down. What 200-day moving average? That means that's not good for markets. Inversely, when that goes up, the markets tend to come down. But now hit the 200-day moving average. But yeah,
China. This has got to be the China.
It is
story,
China. Yeah, well, China is a worrying because they basically said they're affecting Germany a lot and Europe. And finally, this is quickly just cover off. I think we've covered retail sales, but on. Where was it? Rainbow, something like Rainbow Earth. I don't know much.
I'll have to come back to that one. I need to have
Energy bills coming down because the price gap, which is quite good for inflation, but we all know energy been coming down anyway. And in fact, you know, wheat. I had an alert on. I put these alerts on commodities now and again, right? And where was it? Wheat. Look at that, wheat at an all time low, pretty much, which is not a bad thing. Gas is also coming off. I expected gas to rise, but it's coming back off. It didn't rally. If you look at all these commodity prices going back a year, they're all down, which plays into investment. But we covered retail sales. Profits at UK firms yet to fully recover from pandemic despite growth. That's another thing. And this is an interesting thing. Bitcoin is taking a bit of a tumble. Elon Musk is out of crypto completely. And if you look at Bitcoin, pretty much on the crypto index here, it's in a key support levels here, 25. If you look at this level here, that topped out pretty much at 30, 31, come down, broke down above that support level. And now that 25, it looks like it's heading toward 25,000, which is that major support level. But see a bit of sentiment from one of the richest men in the world saying he's out of crypto, and that's what happens to it. There we are.
Well, wasn't it him getting into it in the first place that said
Dogecoin?
I
don't see how I wasn't taken to court for that. Ramping Dogecoin, pretty much. And I thought, you're the richest man in the world. Isn't there some kind of rules about that? They're highly speculative. I don't know if it's even an asset, but yet he's ramping it. No, exactly. Not an asset.
crazy stuff.
Paul E., let's finish on this. I recently had scampi, chips, and peas, plus a bottle of beer for £8.23 at Wetherspoons, cheaper than a charity shop cashmere sweater.
Yes, mate.
Thanks for that, Paul. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Speak you next week. Bye-bye.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.